Have you seen the recent news that the Society of Catholic Scientists is going to be holding its 2021 conference in Washington, D.C., and it's going to be on the subject of non-human intelligences?
No, wow,
Yeah,
interesting.
there was an article that popped up recently. I'll send you the link, and actually to everyone listening, I'll put the link in the description box below as well. But yeah, they recently announced that that's going to be happening, and I'm very interested to see what they end up talking about, because I don't think they've ever done anything like this where the conference is specifically about non-human intelligence, and it's going to be in DC, so could be interesting.
Yeah, that's fascinating. I'm definitely going to read into that because you have to wonder why now, and what are they hoping people get a take away from that conference? Like, do they know something? Do they expect something's coming? And are they trying to get ahead with some messaging with their congregations?
Well, that's what I was thinking as well. And it's funny because I think it was their last nativity play. I don't know if you saw this, but a lot of people on Twitter picked this up. There was for the first time ever in their in like the official kind of like Vatican nativity play, there was an astronaut, and it was like an ancient astronaut, and it was in a full-on suit, and it didn't look completely human, and it was a little strange, and it never something that has never been attributed to the nativity scenes before by the Vatican. So it's almost like they're dropping a little hint that they're planning to talk about something.
Yeah. Well, hopefully they don't try to own the narrative or somehow subvert
No.
it to serve their own purposes, but we'll all be on the lookout for that.
Yeah, for sure. Carolyn, it's a real pleasure to have you come onto the platform for a discussion, because I was very taken with your recent article relating to consciousness and the UFO subject, and so much of it resonated with me on a very deep level, and so I knew I had to get you on to talk about this. So just, thank you very much for accepting my invitation.
Well, thank you very much for having me. That was probably the most fun I've had writing an article, so I'm excited to talk about it.
Absolutely. And how, by the way, just before we jump into all of this, how long have you been a journalist, and have you always covered issues involving what we could call like the paranormal, or did you start off covering more prosaic issues and eventually find your way into this area of research?
Yeah, so I'll give a little bit of the background and story. I've been a writer my whole life in various capacities, but I only started writing about ETs, UFOs, consciousness in the last couple of months, honestly.
Right.
And there's a couple reasons for that. One was just that in what seemed like some divine orchestration, I had this massive clearing out in my life. I'd been working as an on-call consultant and my contracts ended at the end of January, and there was just no more work. So essentially, I found myself without a job. And when I stepped back and kind of looked at my whole life, I said, "Okay, I basically don't have a job right now. I don't have a partner. I don't have any pets. I don't have any kids. At the end of this month, the house that I owned will have sold." So it was just like all of a sudden I don't want to say faced like it was a bad thing, but I realized that I just had this wide open space in front of me. So it gave me an opportunity to step back and say, like, what am I really doing? What do I want to be doing? Because I'd been stepping away from consulting for a while. So I really kind of leaned into my calling and started thinking about my truer purpose. This is kind of where it led me. I think this is just a step on the journey, but I was inspired one day to write an article about disclosure. And 'cause it's something that had been a part of my life for a long time. And that first article, George Knapp picked it up.
Oh, fantastic.
Bryce Zabel at Trail of the Saucers reached out to
Yeah.
me. So it felt like a sign that that I was on the right path.
Right,
And
right.
yeah. But the second piece, I had been writing on Medium for a while, but I think I had some hesitancy about speaking publicly about some of these topics. And it actually wasn't so much that I was worried about what people would think or like, I'm too weird or this or that. Because I was a punk rocker growing up. Like, I've dealt with that. I've been unconventional.
You don't mind about being alternative. Yeah.
Yeah. Not so much. But it was honestly kind of what we call in the coaching world, trouble at the border. Like, I just, my self-doubt kind of kicked in a little bit. And I looked at people who had been researching this for decades and it's like, well, you know, who would care what I have to say?
Right,
you know,
right.
I don't consider myself an expert on this. And I just had to struggle with that kind of monkey mind being like, you know, who are you to talk about this? But then I just had to, you know, sit back and kind of feel through the energy and realize that, you know, I have had my own experiences with this. This is something that, especially on the consciousness side, that I have been studying and experiencing and embodying for a long time, and let's just see what happens. You know, I feel like it was an opportunity for me to forge my own path and try to bring a new and, or I guess just a fresh and maybe different perspective to this topic than what I'd been seeing. So just kind of went for it.
Well, I definitely think that, you know, some of the, well, at least from the articles that I've read, it's refreshing, especially this one that we're going to talk about. And, you know, before we dive into this, let me just say to everyone listening that the links to all of Carolyn's articles will be in the description box below and will also be pinned to the top of the comment section. So I do urge you all, once you're done listening to us have a chat, to go out and check these articles for yourself. Now, we will touch on hopefully some of the other things that you've been speaking about, but the article I wanted to focus on was the one that was titled "What Has Consciousness Got to Do with It?" And I did find this really interesting. So, I mean, you actually put out, like I said, a series of articles within a rather short succession of mm-hmm. each other. March was a pretty busy month for you, wasn't it?
Yeah, just the inspiration and the ideas kept coming, so I just kept writing.
Yeah. Was there anything that prompted this kind of sudden flurry of articles at all?
I think honestly, just me giving it my attention and focus. And I think there was some degree of just it being kind of pent up. Mm. Like I've actually slowed a little bit, which I think is probably natural just because when I first jumped in, it was like, oh, I want to write about this and I want to write about this. And I was really active. I'm still fairly active on Twitter and getting, you know, I'd read something and that would give me an idea. So I just decided that I was just going to go for it. Anytime I had an idea, I was going to see if I could make an article out of it.
Well, the first article of yours that I personally read was this one that we're going to discuss, which was titled "What Has Consciousness Got to Do with It?" And as someone who greatly respects the necessity for the UFO, UAP conversation to include the more esoteric aspects of the subject, the discussion around consciousness as it relates to this phenomenon of UFOs interests me greatly. You start with a quote from the Chinese philosopher Lao Tzu, who says that the key to growth is the introduction of higher dimensions of consciousness into our awareness. When did you personally begin this journey of research into the more esoteric aspects of consciousness, and how, and also when did this connect to the UFO issue for you personally?
Sure. Well, I was always kind of a mystical kid. So I feel like I was primed for it in a sense. Like I used to go after school and lie in this field and just, I thought I was talking to God, but you know, just talk to the skies. And I believed in unicorns and I just was really, I'm pretty sure I still do when push comes to shove.
Hey, in some reality. Yeah, sure.
Yeah. Somewhere. And so I think I just have always been very open to those sorts of things. And then in my early 20s, you know, without taking you guys on too much of a diversion, but it's somewhat interesting. So I dropped out of college after a semester and like hitchhiked and rode freight trains all over
very
the country. Yeah. And so I was just kind of this wild traveling kid. And thinking that I was going to find freedom, you know, that's really just all I had was my backpack and, you know, I had no money really, and just kind of headed out to go explore. And there were some great times and I met some really interesting people, but it was probably the most miserable time in my life too. And I realized that, you know, freedom was not something that I could, wasn't a destination on the map or some place that I would arrive to, or even just inherent in the circumstances around me. You know, I might not have been working or going to school or, you know, been around my parents, but my mind, I was just like in the prison of my own mind and had a lot of anxiety and couldn't appreciate the experience I was having because I was just so just caught up in my own mental stuff. Bit of alcohol didn't help the situation either, if I'm being perfectly honest. But so when I finally kind of that played its course, I started kind of waking up and just realizing that I wanted to find peace. And there had to be more to life than just these patterns and programs that were running in my head. And so I ended up going back to college in Boulder, Colorado, which some may realize is or recognize as kind of a new age capital of the US or one of them. And so I ended up taking a room in this woman's house, an older woman, but she was into all kinds of new age stuff. And so she introduced me to like tarot cards and was like, oh, by the way, there's, we have this channeling group that meets in the living room, you know, every Wednesday. Are you okay with that? And I just said, sure. I didn't really know what she was talking about, but so it was that period in my life where like I got exposed to channeling for the first time. I was really into Buddhism, though, even though Boulder has a very strong Buddhist presence, I didn't fully embrace some of the ritual and just the doctrine around that. But it was very influential for me to just realize that I'm a part of something bigger. You know, I'm not the thoughts that I have in my mind. And so like all these ideas kind of kept coming up and working in my head, but it kind of faded for a little while. And I had a kind of second reawakening when I turned 40. And when I realized like my 30s were spent like getting ahead in my corporate career. And I just had kind of lost myself. And it was like, there was no energy flowing within me anymore. So, but when I turned 40, it was almost like the universe was like, okay, you've been asleep long enough and kind of just jump-started me awake with some things. And I got back into, connected with some people who were channeling higher dimensional beings. And I just started reading and going down rabbit hole after rabbit hole, revisited some of the Zen Buddhist stuff, but really just started resonating more with, teachings around the nature of consciousness, the physics principles that rule this plane of existence. I went down law of attraction a little bit and, like that was helpful in some ways, not in others, but, to bring it back to your question of how this eventually kind of brought me to UFOs, you know, I was reading all this channeled stuff and working with channels but for some reason I hadn't really asked like, who the hell am I talking to? what are these? I was so focused on the messages and my own learning. And then, you know, I had some teachers in particular that really opened my eyes to that there are these other civilizations that have gone through these ascension processes and that exist in different dimensions. And I just said, oh, wow, I want to be a part of that. I want to see that. And then pretty soon after, I started having some of my own experiences.
Well, I definitely, a little bit further down the line, want to get into some of your own experiences because, having my own experiences was a big catalyst for getting involved in this. And, it's a crazy synchronistic journey, which I'm sure you can relate to as well. Given that the way that you kind of emerged into this subject was through the more spiritual, more metaphysical side of this. And I think a lot of people who have emerged into the UFO conversation from that aspect can agree that their journeys are very synchronistic and that there's a lot of things along the way that just kind of push them into this direction. One thing that you speak about in your article is the tension that exists within the UFO community in relation to the more materialistic discussion that has been classified as nuts and bolts, which focuses primarily on the existence of advanced platforms of unknown origin with beyond next generation performance capabilities and characteristics, you know, all this lovely terminology. And then you have the more metaphysical association with the UFO issue that relates to consciousness, and for some, a spiritual journey into some form of, like you said, an awakening process. Now, this rift between the two camps can be at times, you know, quite palpable, and can also generate a level of animosity and contention between individuals with differing ideologies. And this is something I've noticed myself as someone who tries their best to draw information from both of these camps, you know, from both the nuts and bolts side and the more non-material, incorporeal side of this discussion, because I see merit in both sides. And personally, I see a necessity for symbiosis between these two aspects, between the material and the immaterial. So it's my personal belief that the continued progression within things like the realms of quantum mechanics will eventually yield the necessary infrastructure for more materialistically minded individuals to make a transition into this more symbiotic state between physics and metaphysics. What are your thoughts on the necessity for equilibrium between material physics and non-material metaphysics?
Well, I guess to me, it's just a question of why would you choose to limit yourself to one or the other?
Right.
You know, it's all available to us. And, you know, I think coming back sort of to the consciousness aspect, one of the key tenets is that the level of consciousness that you are at and the sort of thoughts and beliefs that you bring up to this will shape your experience of it.
Mm-hmm.
And so to me, it's not a coincidence that a lot of the people who are just focused on the, you know, let's go out and kick the tires kind of thing, and just more interested in the engineering of it. A lot of those people have not had their own experiences, and that's not a deficiency, but I think it goes to show that, well, let me tell a quick story. So
please.
A friend of mine, a couple, they were driving, and she's had incredible UFO sightings. I'm just waiting for the day that she decides to go public with some of her photos.
Well, when she does, throw my way.
Yeah, for sure. I've seen some stuff. but when they first started appearing to her, she'd be driving with her husband in the car, and you know, she's like, do you see that? Like, oh my God, like there's a flying saucer, like right there. And she could see it and he couldn't.
Yeah.
Cause he wasn't, you know, wasn't at the frequency to be able to perceive those things. And so for me, it's just, you know, of course I love data. I'll be really interested in the, so I was a consultant in the energy field. So I'm really interested in, you know, what are the physics behind how these craft work and the energy sources and how they're powered and so forth. But it's an opening to a so much bigger that I don't understand why someone would want to close that door.
Well, I think sometimes, especially when it comes down to the materialistic aspects of this, where people are quite embedded within a mindset of this is just a material discussion, it does come back to the fact that dogma exists within science and also religion, you know, both of these things. You know, science is not free of dogmatic opinions and people who just want to maintain what has been the status quo and what is the current paradigm. And, you know, I've said this before, but in some way, I kind of view the role of, for example, a quantum physicist as a role of explaining in more complicated terminologies, which are more academically accepted, the same ideas and wisdoms that have been explained in simpler terms for thousands of years by spiritual masters, right? And like, you know, there are lots of examples to choose from, but to be honest, a good example of this comes from a recent presentation I listened to that was presented at the Royal Institution. And it was a presentation by a theoretical physicist called David Tong. It's a fantastic presentation. I'll put a link into the description box for everyone listening. But something that David Tong said really piqued my interest because it seemed so clear to me that this was, in essence, a spiritual statement being articulated through the lens of a scientific observation. What David said was, all the electrons in your body are waves of the same underlying field. We are all connected to each other. The electrons in your body are ripples of the same field as the electrons in my body, right? Now, to me, this kind of observation has already been observed upon in the simpler, more spiritual terminology of we are one, you know? And this is where I'm personally seeing this merging of science and spirituality. Understandings such as this through the lens of science seem to be edging us ever closer to this merging and this symbiosis between the two. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, no, I completely agree with you. And from my perspective, I don't care how people arrive there.
Right.
It's just this idea. Once people, I guess I can only speak for my own life, but it seems to be a fairly common theme that once you do start awakening to these, guess I'll call them higher truths or just fundamentals of existence, your life really starts to change. And for me, it's been incredibly empowering and liberating, especially when I really kind of lean into this idea that we are all one, mm-hmm. and that we are all energy with consciousness, that what we're experiencing here is just what we've focused into form. And when you think of it that way, I was actually thinking about this morning after meditating. It's like, okay, I'm energy with consciousness, an eternal divine being. I'm focusing my consciousness into this human experience. But really I'm focusing everything. So it's like, not only am I this source focused into form, but the bed and the cup of coffee and, I'm the creator within my own creation. And what a gift to be able to interact with other creators creating within their own creation, and absolutely. To know that we're all just, we all chose to be here at this time for a certain purpose as things are really changing. Mm-hmm. And for me, that builds a real sense of camaraderie, even just beyond the fact that we're all, connected and from the same energy, but just that we all, we're all on Team Earth right now.
Yeah.
And it may seem like we're playing for different teams at times, and kind of competing, but it's like, ultimately we're all here playing the same Earth game with each other. And that's kind of cool.
I love how you worded this in your article, because you very much echo my own thoughts and feelings that have been brought upon myself via my own personal journey through the intake of, different materials and books, interviews, presentations, and most important to myself, and I'm guessing for yourself as well, was my own personal experiences. That's very much reinforced my beliefs when it came to consciousness and my ideas on what ultimate reality might be. And I want to read a paragraph from your article actually back to you, and then follow up with a question, if that's all right.
Yeah, please.
So you said, in the beginning, there was a force of pure love energy. You can call it source, spirit, universe, God, or any other word that represents that creative power to you. Source dispersed its own energy to create all of us, all of those we would call extraterrestrials and everything else in existence, so that it could have an experience of itself in endless forms. As aspects of source, we are energy with consciousness, where consciousness is really just the awareness of the source that we are. Though beyond our human perception, we are eternal beings existing beyond time and space in a non-physical state as pure consciousness. Like our creator, we dispersed our energy to have a multitude of experiences across different dimensions and planes of existence. We do this for the thrill and joy of creation, evolution, and expansion. The particular experience of the consciousness reading these words is that of human on Earth, and the original aspect of us, sometimes called higher self or soul, focused its energy into material form to have this human experience. This is one of many simultaneous incarnations or soul expressions. So I resonate with that so much, and it is the same understanding that I've come to via my own personal journey. Now, I would wager, like I was saying before, that this understanding that you've so eloquently expressed in your article has come about through a vast network of personal synchronicities, experiences, teachings that you've absorbed throughout your personal life. And so I understand that it's not easy to distill this journey down into a succinct overview. But if you could tell us how and why you've arrived at these ideas and beliefs in relation to consciousness, the human experience, our place in reality, I'd love to hear how this understanding has come to you.
Sure. Yeah, I certainly didn't make it up.
I
Even
don't
though
think you did
I
either.
think we all carry this innate knowledge within us that we can tap into. But I think I would the path that I took that helped me the most was working closely with a collective of higher dimensional beings. So I connected with a woman named Kelly Thebo, who lives in Wisconsin, and she is a trance channel, meaning her consciousness kind of steps aside, and she lets these beings come through. And I've been working with them for over 2 years now, and these are just some of their core teachings. But it's the sort of thing where, and I've heard it from, it was reinforced through things I heard from lots of different sources. And so this was kind of my summary of it. But essentially, kind of what you were saying that you resonated with it. I mean, I resonated with it too when I first heard it. It was sort of a deep knowing, and honestly, as they say, they're not teaching us anything we don't know. They're just helping us remember, sort of get past the human filters that we perceive things through. But I would say, I've been like back in my early 20s, I read a lot of this stuff and it didn't really sink in. So it took me being in a different place in my life, I think just being more open and having different experiences and watching these principles and these teachings come to life in my own life and applying them in a deliberate way that really convinced me that there's definitely some truth here.
Well, I haven't had as many years to absorb these practices and take them in and act on them as you have yet, because I've only really been turned on to these types of things for the past maybe 5 years, maybe just a little bit over 5 years. But I am more, almost every day now that goes by, I'm feeling more and more pulled to act on the things that I know I should be acting on. Like it's one of those things where, because you just said that you'd had a meditation today. I do not meditate every day, and I want to, and I tell myself I should meditate every day, and I still don't. And it's one of those things where I feel like it's funny when it's worse, to be honest, to know the things that you need to do and not do them than to just be ignorant to them. You know what I mean? Because if you don't know that you should be meditating every day, then it's not an issue. But if you know you should and you're not doing it, it can have an effect on you. And so I'm getting that pull. And that's why I had you on, and that's why I've done some of my recent talks, because I started this whole thing through the lens of consciousness. And as I've kind of progressed as a platform, as Project Unity, I've kind of been dragged. Well, I say dragged, I've been very happy to do the coverage I've been doing, but I've kind of transitioned into the nuts and bolts stuff and covering the emerging topics coming out from 2017, New York Times, ATIP, Navy incursions, and all of that. And I really enjoy doing it, but more so now I've been feeling this pull to bring it back into that consciousness conversation. And one of the things actually that I wanted to talk about is in your article, you go on to talk about the necessity for duality, for contrast within this physical realm of existence, which is once again, very much in alignment with my thoughts on this subject, that there is a necessity for that which we are not, so that we may not only know but also experience that which we are, right? And the idea that you can only experience your true nature by having something to contrast and compare it to, it seems to me that we're, you know, with life, we're on this beautiful and sometimes terrifying journey through the physical experience, so that we may understand our highest nature, our truest form. You know, it's all well and good knowing that you're the light, that you are love, but absent the experience of it, the knowing of it is simply that. It's just a knowing. And, you know, as you've said, I also believe that at the highest level of reality, that knowing is all encompassing. And so we have decided to, in some way, separate ourselves from the knowing of it and have immersed ourselves in amnesia so that we may, through the experience of individuation, remember what we truly are. And I think that this is an incredibly powerful thing for people to realize. And it's also incredibly controversial for some people because, you know, in allowing there to be a contrast, a dark and a light and an up and a down, the dark aspects, the down aspects, that which we label as negative or bad are in of themselves sacred and divine, because it is through this contrast that we're permitted to know our true form and remember what we are. And, you know, that does not mean that all the different types of suffering that we experience on this planet are necessary, but it does mean that within this physical experience that there is a necessary ebb and flow, you know, a rise and fall component of this physical experience. And I believe that that's, you know, what you were putting forward in this article of yours, right? That there was this necessary duality.
Well, I think it's, in a sense, yes. I guess the way I would maybe explain it is, I think we are in the third dimension is a dimension of duality, sort of that good, bad,
right,
black,
yeah,
white. And so we're all living duality all the time. And sometimes, you know, I would contrast, the way I think of contrast is more something to get our attention that shows us that we're out of alignment, and it's our opportunity to make a different choice and sort of get some new energy moving. And so I see them as like a little bit different, because I think, you know, in the, as we move away from duality, like into the fifth dimension, there will still be contrast. I think it just won't be as stark,
right.
You know, and I think it's even in your own personal journey. I don't know if you've noticed, but, I'll say in my own life, you know, I used to need, I'll just use like relationships as an example. Like it would take a relationship getting like pretty bad for me to like realize, see the contrast that was happening.
Yeah. Same here.
Yeah. And, to make a different choice. And whereas now, not that I've perfected this in any sense, but it's like, you know, you kind of learn the lessons, you learn your patterns and your habitual ways of thinking and behaving and feeling. And then it takes, and this is actually a really good thing, I've noticed that it takes less and less to the self-aware person. It takes less and less contrast to get the attention.
Right. Yeah. That's a good way of putting it, actually. I like
yeah.
that.
So it's not so much like good, bad. It's more like, do I like this, you know, or would I prefer something else? And it's sort of that feeling for alignment or misalignment. And honestly though, it's like, it doesn't, the irony is that it doesn't take as much now to get my attention. Like I don't need to get in like a car crash or something like that. You know, it can just be a pretty subtle thing, but it actually feels so much worse because I know I'm so much more attuned to what flow feels like.
Yeah.
And joy feels like, and ease feels like, that when I'm not feeling that, it's like, it might not have come up by all that much, but I'm like, oh, you know, it feels awful. So.
Well, you're listening to your gut more, you know, your intuition.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's funny. It's like with me, you know, when, before I started Project Unity, I made this decision. I'm not going to think about plan A to Z. I'm not going to worry about what I might be doing in, you know, a year or 2 years or 3 years. I'm just, oh, yep. Am I back?
Yep. You're back.
Yeah. Okay, cool. What I was saying was that, before I created Project Unity, I remember having a very clear decision at one point, which was that I'm not going to have a plan, you know, through A to Z, and I'm not going to think about what I'm going to be doing in a year's time or 2 years time or 3 years time. I'm just going to literally every single day, just go with whatever I feel like I should be doing that day and just trust my intuition. And honestly, you know, that has been the time period where I created Project Unity, where I suddenly got a lot of different opportunities that just suddenly flowed into my life, you know, out of nowhere. And so it seems to me that trusting your intuition, and the more that you do that, the more sensitive you become to certain things. And, you know, your intuition, like a muscle, almost gets strengthened. So like you say, it takes less and less effort to pick up on kind of subtle vibrations or frequencies, mm-hmm. however you want to call it, that kind of put you into the right way and guide you into the right path. And I'll tell you, a very important series of books in my life, books that actually started this entire journey and interest in consciousness studies, which eventually led to my involvement in the UFO community, is a series of books called Conversations with God by the author Neil Donald Walsh. Are you familiar with these books at all?
I've heard of them, but I have not read them.
Yeah, well, these were kind of like the initial catalyst for me. And it's funny, I'm actually going to be interviewing Neil in May, which I'm really excited about. But in keeping with the topic of the duality within the realm of the physical, actually, let me just bring it up. I was wondering if I could I read an excerpt from this book from the Conversations with God series? Yeah, and let me just see what you think of this. So this comes from the first book, and it's like a little parable that was, you know, given to him, because Neil was basically, by the sounds of it, was receiving downloads from something that he interpreted as God or the source. He started off as quite a Christian person, and since then has you know, kind of changed his spiritual beliefs and is now much more into the realms of a universal consciousness, and doesn't label it as much as he used to through the paradigm of Christianity. But this was something that was said to him, which I thought was quite interesting. So the story goes, there was once a soul that knew itself to be the light. This was a new soul, and so anxious for experience. I am the light, it said. Yet all the knowing of it and all the saying of it could not substitute for the experience of it. And in the realm from which this soul emerged, there was nothing but the light. Every soul was grand. Every soul was magnificent. And every soul shone with the brilliance of the light. And so the little soul in question was as a candle in the sun, in the midst of the grandest light of which it was a part. It could not see itself nor experience itself as who and what it really is. Now it came to pass that this little soul yearned and yearned to know itself. So great was its yearning that the source one day said, "Do you know, little one, what you must do to satisfy this yearning of yours? You must separate yourself from the rest of us, and then you must call upon yourself the darkness." "What is the darkness?" the little soul asked. "That which you are not," said the source, and the little soul understood. And so this soul did, removing itself from the source, going even unto another realm. And in this realm, the soul had the power to call into its experience all manner of darkness, and this it did. Yet in the midst of all the darkness did it cry out, "Father, Father, why hast thou forsaken me?" Even as you have in your darkest times, yet you were never forsaken. The source stands by you always, ready to remind you of who you really are, always ready to call you home. Therefore, be a light unto the darkness and curse it not.
One of the points that I really like at the end, that I think the quote metaphysical community could do a much better job at, is not trying to separate so much from the darkness, right. You know, I think there's a lot of people that are like, I don't want to see that. I don't want to acknowledge that, you know, and will really turn away from people that they consider dark or whatever. And certainly we all can make a choice of who we want to spend time with. And, you know, there's questions of resonance, but how does the dark ever know the light if the light keeps running away from it? You know, it's like, so I love that too, because I think it speaks to opportunity. Those of us who are, you know, on this path can be the, I don't really like the term light worker. I think it's kind of corny, but
yeah, me too. It makes me cringe.
Yeah. But you know, just to, through the living of our own lives and the shining of our own lights, you know, make that frequency available for others to go into resonance with.
Yeah. Well, see, a lot of this has got to come down to, you know, individuals perception of reality. And you know, that's also something that you mentioned in your article. You speak about the manifestation of our reality through our perception of it, and that neurological science, for example, is beginning to catch up with this idea through the understanding that our brains will seek to gather evidence from our lives that support our current perception of ourselves in our localized reality or environment. And you know, when enough evidence is gathered to support our discernment, our actions then subsequently reinforce these insights. And so a reality is created around our ideas and our perceptions of it. And, you know, this personal perception is likely not a fully formed representation of the ultimate reality we face. And yet it can be incredibly real to each of us as individuals when we form these, you know, what you could call almost like bubble realities or mirror realities, where our inward projection of life becomes our outward reflection of experience. Yeah. You know, have you personally found any methods that allow you to overcome this and allow a more objective observation of reality to become prominent in your mind instead of telling yourself a story?
I don't know methods so much, but, you know, I guess just, when I wake up every morning, I do meditate. Mm. And, but even putting that aside, I do kind of affirm to myself that, you know, what do I want to create today? Like, this is what experience, how do I want to feel? Just affirming to myself mm. that, you know, I am writing the script for my day, and I'm trying to get better. You know, like everybody, I have certain like defaults that I fall into. And, but I just try throughout the day to bring myself back to, all right, where is my focus right now? Like, what thoughts am I thinking? How am I feeling? And just trying to continuously kind of like nudge myself back into alignment when I find myself doing that. But, you know, honestly, it's like some of these teachings are so simple right. in concept and
in practice.
Yeah, they can be a little difficult. But, you know, one of the things that I've loved about the sort of situation that I've created for myself here is I really can at the beginning of each day just say, what would bring me joy today? What would I enjoy doing? And a lot of days that's research, that's writing. Some days I'll just go hiking, or I'll go kayaking, or I'll read a book. But I've really set up my life so that I can really just be led by what I want to do. And, you know, there's probably a lot of people saying like, well, you know, fucking good for you. You know, like that's, you know, and, you know, I can't, there's a lot of people who would say, I can't do that for this, that, or the reason, you know? But it's like, it was just a series of choices that I made, and, you know, creations that I created, and priorities that I prioritized, and, you know, to create where I am now. So,
you know, one of my default modes that I'm trying to eradicate is checking Twitter immediately when I wake up in the morning.
Yeah, that can be a little bit of a crash.
right.
But, you know, it's kind of going back to what one of the things you were saying. And I try not to get into arguments on Twitter, but
yeah, me too.
Because there are some people on, it actually happened again today. For the people who don't really understand what you were saying about the, you know, the thoughts and the beliefs forming the experience is, you know, a lot of these nuts and bolts people are also the same ones who are really focused on the threat aspect of UFOs and ETs. And, you know, and even some of the people who are more into the ET aspect are just convinced that they're all evil and they're here to intervene and interfere and manipulate us. And I do think that is happening. But I think that's like a small piece of the whole pie. And so it's, you know, I don't care what experience someone wants to pick for themselves. I think it's unfortunate that all these people who are focusing on the threat, and there's these like malevolent ETs, you know, waiting in the wings to do who knows what, you know, to us, it's like when contact starts happening, when these things start accelerating, that's going to be the experience that they have.
Yeah.
And, you know, so they're not going to understand that I can have, you know, a really positive experience, because it's not going to be an experience that's available to them because they're just not seeing it as possible. So that's honestly what one of the main motivations why I wrote that article is, because I felt like I kept dancing around this and trying to explain in other ways of why didn't need to approach this topic with fear and with such negativity. And then so finally what that article basically was me doing is just like laying it all out the way I see it and trying to get people to understand, like, we don't need to be afraid, you know. Even like, I'm not denying there are you know, ETs here without the purest intentions, but I'm not going to invite that into my experience or feel powerless because of it. It's like, we're all source, we're all divine beings. They may have figured out how to like work with imagery a little better and like show up in a form, like anything that shows up in a form that's really scary to us, they're doing it for a reason.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's at the end of the day, we're all just kind of like holograms, like light show. And so it's like, we don't need to be afraid of that. And the more these people focus on all the bad things that are going to happen, that's, you know, that's what they're going to create for themselves. And it's just unfortunate, you know.
I agree with you. Well, exactly as you were saying, the issue is that when you're focusing on those things, you're attracting them into your life, you're drawing them into your life. And you know, for me, it's been a bit of a battle recently, because, you know, and I'm sure you can agree with this, if you're talking to someone who you've just got off the street, or a family member or a friend who has never been involved in this subject and has literally like zero knowledge on this subject, I don't know about you, but my go-to is, okay, so in 2017, the New York Times released a front page story, the Pentagon, the ATIP, the Navy incursions, because that is a really good way of kind of getting someone who's new to this to realize that it's being taken seriously. Instead of, you know, if I took someone in my family who'd never, you know, listen to this type of stuff and researched it and just started with the interdimensional light beings and love and attraction, they might be like, what the hell, Jay? You know, what's going on here? So I, you know, I've been trying to strike the right balance, because I know that people who are just arriving into this subject, especially now that it's starting to become more mainstream, they do need a template, like a kind of a foundation to then build upon, and the nuts and bolts is the easier example to kind of start with. But for me, it seems really, really necessary that we are not afraid, or feel, you know, intimidated away from speaking about consciousness and speaking about these, other aspects of this, especially if it resonates with us very strongly, because, you know, for starters, you shouldn't ever suppress yourself regardless of what it is. You know, if you have something that you really want to speak out and it feels like your truth, then, you know, by all means you should speak it, but especially within this community, because as we're going into this modern day discussion, you know, there are people that very much do not want us to talk about this stuff, because it's like, hey, no, you've got to toe the line, you've got to talk about, you know, the military incursions and, you know, the potential threat and the Senate Intelligence Committee and the report that's coming in June. And, you know, to a certain extent, I agree. It's good to talk about these things and make sure that there's a, like I said, a foundation for people that are just coming into this. But there is a deeper level to this. You know, the nuts and bolts to me really does seem like the very tip of the iceberg. And then underneath that, you've just got this whole realm of esoteric, philosophical, spiritual, metaphysical aspects that just cannot be ignored. And I think what worries me a little bit is if you look at the projection of what's being addressed by governments and you know, what's being reported on in the mainstream media, you think about when consciousness and love and light and, like, you know, beings from another dimension that want to assist in this effort, you think about when that might enter the conversation. I mean, come on, based on what they're talking about now, it's like 100 years from now that they're going to want to talk about that kind of stuff. And so I think it is up to people who have had experiences, who, you know, have the ability to articulate this subject and talk about it, step up to the plate and actually do that and try and get people to learn. And, you know, to kind of bring it back into your article, one thing that you mentioned is that we're entering a new state of being, a fifth density state. As you also mentioned, there are, you know, to our knowledge, 12 dimensions of reality. Can you talk about what you see as the transition of planet Earth into this higher dimensional state, and why this is such an important time for us as a species to evolve into a higher realm of consciousness?
Sure. I mean, I can offer my understanding of it, which is, you know, just that.
But, yeah, of course.
But my understanding is that it was always kind of part of the plan to, you know, for humanity, Earth, to go through this ascension process. And apparently this happens throughout the universe, you know, that civilizations ascend, descend, ascend. It's, so it's this whole process. And so it was always something that was going to happen. And then, but it really, so we move through a space, and we're in a sector of space now with high photonic energy, fifth dimensional energies. And so what that actually means is it's changing us on a molecular level, such that kids, like babies that are being born after 2012, actually, and I guess doctors are starting to discover this, though you won't obviously read about it in the mainstream media, but we're molecularly changing. And at the same time, these energies are bringing things to the surface. You know, it's like there's this pull toward truth. Mm. And so that's why I think now you see just a lot more people waking up and starting to question things and maybe not accept narratives as readily as they had been, people taking, willing to entertain different perspectives. And I think that's all part of this journey into the fifth dimension, which I believe that we are in the very early stages from. You know, some metaphysical teachers make it sound like there's this like fifth dimensional Earth that, like, you know, once you have like the right thoughts, when you knock on the door, they'll be like, yeah, come on in. And it's this like fully formed new paradise world that we get to like go to. Whereas my understanding is that through our, again, consciousness and the choices that we make, we're actually creating that world here and now. And that's why it is so important for people to, I think, fully express themselves and embrace what feels true to them, and try to leave behind some of the things so characteristic of the third dimension, like judgment, fearing others, you know, fighting, and so forth. So does that answer your question?
Yeah, no, absolutely. You know, and I've said this before, but much like within one's own life, there are catalysts for change, some of which can, you know, arrive into your life as turbulent events, which at the time can feel very negative, but upon reflection can be seen as necessary moments that allowed for a new, you know, a new way of being, to become adoptable as you grow as an individual. The same can be said for a species. And so global changes will require global catalysts, you know, and based on the state of the world at the moment, it would seem to me that this is what is happening, and that this might actually be the perfect time for advancement within our species, even though it doesn't look like it right now. Just like when you're going through a turbulent event, you don't sit there and, well, you know, unless you're very profound in your ability to kind of be intuitive, most people, myself included, when you're actually going through a negative situation, you'll start off being like, oh my God, this is a negative situation. Like, you know, this sucks, this is bad. But then usually with some level of self-reflection, I'm able to go, actually, that led to A, to B, to C. And so, you know, that wasn't necessarily a bad thing. But yeah, the way the world is going right now, it just seems like that's very much reflective of what happens in a personal life when it's getting a bit of a kick up the butt, really. And you know, I do genuinely think that we are heading into a new paradigm. I'm not quite sure what that paradigm is. And I'm just wondering if you have any thoughts or ideas. Oh, did I cut out again?
Yeah, just for...
No worries. So I do genuinely believe that we're heading into some form of a new paradigm, but I don't necessarily know what that new paradigm is or what it might entail. And I'm just wondering, do you have any thoughts or feelings on what this new age, new paradigm would look like, in your opinion?
I spend a decent amount of time trying to visualize that.
Okay.
That's one of the things that I've been taught that will get us there, is the more people actually start visualizing and feeling into what a fifth dimensional world could look like and feel like, that's how we bring it about. So, I think it'll be individual for people, but you know, part of what I like to visualize is, and it sounds kind of cheesy, but it honestly, it like gets my energy up. Like I imagine like wild horses running and like, farm animals being let out of cages and like, I imagine like little villages. And so it's like where people, there's like the baker. In a sense, I like go back to like medieval England in my brain, which is like actually regressive probably, but it's like, you know, I just build this kind of utopia in my mind. Not that I think necessarily that that's what we're stepping into, but I think it's important for people to, whatever that paradise is for them, to connect with that feeling. And, you know, for me, again, I put some images to it, but it's really the characteristics of it are that, you know, people are looking out for one another, that it's like you have what you need when you need it. People are working cooperatively. We're caring for the earth. You know, there's a real absence. It's a free earth. Like a lot of people talk about new earth. In my mind, I call it the free earth, because in my mind, we've gotten past like the governments that we have now, gone in my dream. You know, it's like more cooperative, kind of self-governance, and you know, a lot more local sustainability, I think. And so, you know, people can listen to these kinds of things, and maybe there's no money, you know, because we all just have what we need and there's exchange. And so it can sound really far-fetched, but I think we need to dream a little bit bigger now and then like, you know, create some far off, or what feels like a far off vision, but then the steps to it become a lot more clear. Because I think if we anchor ourselves to what the world's like now, like we're always just going to be taking like these little
baby steps.
Yeah. But one of the things I was going back to something you were saying too, is I think it's why I'm sensitive to this whole threat narrative letting the government control the narrative on this, because I do feel like, you know, obviously there's some crazy stuff going on in the world right now. I don't know where all this like UFO and ET stuff fits in, but, you know, it's one possibility that that it will be used. And there are some people in the community that talk this way, but, you know, that it will be used to create more chaos and fear, and that you know, and be used in a divisive way, and that would be really unfortunate, because I mean, again, we don't know exactly how it's going to play out, but And there could, and I've written about this too, I think there's good reason to be discerning and and cautious, but not scared and not overly so, and not like creating the self-fulfilling prophecy.
Not making that the main focus.
Yeah. Because I mean, if you look at the government's track record on this topic, and just knowing that, you know, the government and the media are all kind of run by powerful interests. I was listening to an interview you did with, what was his name? He wrote that book, Little Anton.
Oh yeah, John Warner the Fourth.
Yeah, yeah, he had some really interesting things to say. But you know, to me, it's very plausible that there, and I think we see this in the world readily all the time, that there are powerful interests and agendas, and one of the ways they maintain power is to control the narrative around some of these things. And so it makes me a little concerned and alert, I guess, when I hear, you know, when this threat narrative is really pumped up.
Yeah. Well, I think one thing that's frustrated me a bit as well, even though, I mean, you know, from a governmental perspective, I can understand why they're saving face, but it's the avoidance of culpability. Because if you've only just come into this subject, and if you're listening to it from like the mainstream news, the UFO subject basically started in 2004 with the Tic Tac incident with David Fravor, you know, and there's, you know, because you've even got people like Christopher Mellon going on to, you know, Fox News and saying, oh, well, it's not so much a cover up, but it's the fact that we didn't have the correct reporting mechanisms, that we, you know, that there was this level of ignorance within the bureaucracy. And at a surface level, I would say that's probably true. You know, at the surface level of government, there is this ignorance and stigma. But deep down in the black programs and, you know, the areas where they have been researching this for 7 decades plus, you know, that is never going to be spoken about by governments openly. Then, you know, the US government's never going to want to open up about that kind of thing. And so I do find that aspect of it quite frustrating, that, you know, the history of this is kind of being swept away, and there's a lot to pick apart in the history that actually leads into the consciousness side of it, especially when it comes to certain visitations and certain messages that have been given to experiences. And, you know, there's a massive chunk of this discussion that's not being addressed, and it's just focalizing on, yes, military incursions, penetrations into sensitive sites, and, you know, shadowing carrier strike groups into the Middle East. And it's all very scary. Like, oh my gosh, you know, there's these unknown platforms that are, you know, running circles around our military assets. And you know, that it's really difficult for me, because it just feels like part of that could be a necessary dialogue to open up the conversation and then expand from there. But, you know, if we're going to let the governments alone tell this story, then I do think that we're going to have an extremely restricted narrative that avoids not only culpability, but also extremely challenging things like the consciousness aspect of this. You know, I would love to ask you about some of your experiences actually with the phenomenon. So if we could touch on that, wherever you want to go with this, whether it's the first experience or the most prominent, whatever you want to talk about in relation to that, I'd love to hear from you.
Sure. Well, I did have one brief experience in Colorado many years ago. Actually, this was like the early 2000s, but it wasn't really on my radar then. But I'll mention it just because it was interesting. Where I was out letting my dog out late at night to go to the bathroom, and I just looked up, and there was like it looked just kind of like a star satellite, but there was one, and then behind it there was two, and then behind it was a three, and this whole like formation, like phalanx, started moving across the sky. And I was like, what the F? and I actually got a little scared, because I was just, it looked like, you know, like a fleet. And I'm like, well, if I can see them, maybe they can see me. And I was just like, all right, come on, let's go. So I think that was probably my first sighting. I've never heard of that being able to be explained by anything else. Okay. So that was sort of like an accidental sighting. But I started, you know, a couple of years ago, year and a half or so, getting, being really interested in wanting to have my own experiences. And partly for the reasons we were just talking about, in that, like, I wanted to experience for myself. I didn't want to rely on the government to tell me, or, you know, somebody else's. I wanted to know and for myself. So the first thing I did was I set the intention that I wanted to have these experiences, you know, and I started kind of making the calls out just to say, you know, I'm making it welcome. I want to be in relationship with you all. I want to see you, those benevolent beings that share the same goals as I do. You know, I put some boundaries around it. I didn't want just anybody kind of showing up, but, and then I started going out, you know, just going out and looking at the sky. And, it took a little while. Like, first several times there were some things where I'm like, well, maybe, but I'm not really sure. You know, where I saw stuff that could have been, but maybe not. But then it was actually it was like two nights before I was getting ready to leave on this extended road trip. That I'm kind of still on, honestly. So this was about 8 months ago. And I had just gotten back from my parents' house, who was doing like a little birthday and send off dinner for me. And I looked up, and just this ball of light came in pretty low. I lived at the time on this lake, and came in and was pretty low and just really bright, and just kind of like had like a pulsing quality to it. And to the
was
point
this a
that
day,
I just,
daytime or nighttime?
Nighttime.
All right.
So I had just like an instant, like, that is something.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually did pull out my phone. I mean, so it's like a cell phone video, but I watched it for a little bit, and it was very slow moving too. I watched it for a little bit, then I videoed it for a little bit. And then I was like, this is too cool to like be looking at through my phone. So I just watched it. And then the interesting thing was it just reached a spot where it just like zoomed out and was gone.
Wow.
And so I ran inside and I did my like happy. I was like, yeah, because I've been like waiting for that for so long. And I was like, that was so cool. And then I looked out the window, and it was either the same one or another one. It happened again. And so I ran outside, and I didn't try to film it or anything. I was like, I'm just going to enjoy this. And it was the same thing, like a big light with kind of different colors, moving slow and bright. And then it disappeared in pretty much the same spot.
Wow.
And so the interesting thing that I kind of took away from that, I mean, I was very grateful. I felt like I was finally heard. And it's funny, because I was going on the road trip, and I did do this, but I went to a lot of places that were considered portals, vortexes, UFO hotspots.
Right.
And it was kind of like they were saying, like, you know, when we want you to see us, like, you'll see us.
Yeah,
and
you
like,
don't need to be in a hotspot or a vortex.
Yeah, yeah, like we'll come to you. And it was the sort of thing, like, it was right when I got out of my car. So, like, the timing was perfect. And there was no, I mean, people are skeptical about these kinds of things. But, I mean, I'm just telling you, there was nothing else that it could have been. Like, I was on Cape Cod. There's no, like, it wasn't a plane. It wasn't flashing. There's, like, no traffic, you know. Well, there is traffic there, but it's like at certain times, and it's a low flying plane that lands like not that far away. So you hear it, you know, and it's mm-hmm. like loud. So Able, and certainly wasn't a satellite, you know, it wasn't a flare. Like there's, and I just knew then. I was like, that one was for me.
Yeah.
And since then, you know, I do think it's like, you make it welcome, you show that excitement, you express that gratitude. And then when I was in Sedona, I do think there's definitely something going on in Sedona.
Okay.
But I did. I went on a couple of UFO tours with night vision goggles.
Is that with Melinda Leslie or?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. And saw some cool stuff there. But I actually went out pretty much every night I was there just by myself. And there was one night where I was out by myself and kind of a similar thing happened where there was just a big ball of what appeared like a big ball of light that was just moving very slow. And then I could watch it. And I did get a video of this one, but which actually when you blew up and like slowed it down, you could see like kind of a pyramid shape or like a cube kind of shape, actually. Sorry. Like a cube. But it just like, and then watching it like leave the atmosphere and stuff. And like, it was, wow. So that was really cool. And then, yeah, back on Cape Cod, I flew back to the East Coast. So this was just last week or something. And I had this big, just emotional outpouring. And, part of it was, I was just calling out to them. It was honestly in a little bit of frustration. I'm really hoping for physical contact.
Yeah.
Too. And I just had this kind of moment of like, what more do you guys want from me?
I've had that as well.
Yeah. And I'm like, I'm just meet me halfway. Like, come on. And I went outside. I just had this kind of this voice in my head that was like, go outside. And I went outside and, yeah, there was just this orange, ball of light that kind of just like cruised across the sky and then like disappeared, you know, right in the middle of the sky. And I was like, all right, we're good.
Yeah.
It's fine.
You're still there. You're still listening to me. Yeah. Oh man. I can so relate to that. I really can. Do you know about my own experiences at all?
Yeah, I heard you talk about the orange orbs, I think you called it.
Yeah, or orange orbs of light, I guess, is the only thing I can really call them. But yeah, I mean, I've only seen them four times, and it was in a very quick succession of each other. Like within the space of about a month, I had these experiences. And you know, I'd been going out into my garden and just like you, looking up at the stars. And for the first couple of months, I was seeing flashes of light and, you know, strange little white orbs that would flash multiple times as they came across. And it seemed to be kind of in connection with my thought process. And, you know, that was very exciting. But yeah, you know, for me, it was this experience, this first initial experience with these orange orbs that just took me away. Because literally, I mean, just outside there where my garden is, you know, I was outside looking up at the stars, and just to kind of quickly go over it, it was a crystal clear night, and there was just this gray, almost staticky looking cloud that was floating past my house. And, you know, it was kind of like a double take. I like looked up at it and then looked back down and was like, looked back up again, like, oh my God, what's that? And it was, it's so hard to explain, but it really was like, it looked like a cloud, but it had this very strange appearance to it where it almost looked like it was charged. Like all the little bits and particles were like TV static almost. And, you know, I was staring at this thing as it just kind of started going across. If that's my house, my fist, then this cloud was going like this, and then it literally just went like that, did a complete right angle turn and started coming towards me, not down towards me, but in the same direction. It was like heading over my head, and literally as it got above my head, this cloud just melted away. It just vanished in you know, in literally the space of like a second and a half. It just went and inside it was this triangle formation of like 25, 30 orange orbs. Yeah. Like, you know, that was the first time I saw them, and they just melted out of this cloud, and there was this triangle formation of orbs, and it just carried on going that way. And I looked behind me and was just watched it go off into the distance. And the first thing I did was call my mom. Literally, she was having dinner with my stepdad, and they were at a restaurant, and I just phoned my mom up like, you're not gonna believe what I just saw. And I was like half in tears, and I was just like, I was so emotional, because you know, this for me was such a culmination of the things that I had believed were real. And, you know, I'd come into this, and this is why I do understand people's apprehension, and I feel their frustration when they've been introduced into this subject through the nuts and bolts side, because I feel quite fortunate that I was initially looking into consciousness and consciousness studies before I got involved in the UFO subject. So there was this template of, there is a universal consciousness, there is a non-local capacity to consciousness, I'm not restricted to my physical body. Like that was already templated into my life before I got immersed into the UFO topic. And then literally, and you know, for some people it's going to be controversial, and to be honest, I do understand, because Dr. Stephen Greer has become a controversial character in the UFO community, and I do not particularly believe that you should be capitalizing on making this type of contact. So let me put it out there for those that you know, have that issue. I understand and I resonate with that. But the first thing that introduced me to the UFO subject was the documentary Unacknowledged. My best mm-hmm. friend was like, hey, you've got to listen, you've got to check this documentary out. So we sat down and we watched it. And for me, it was quite profound, because I'd actually got to a point in my experience of, you know, looking into consciousness and looking into quantum mechanics and coming to these kind of conclusions and ideas about life. I'd actually got quite depressed because I felt like I'd taken in a lot of information, but I had no idea where to go with it. You know, I just kind of felt like, to a certain extent, I almost felt like life was a nuisance, and I wanted to get to the next bit where I was this energetic being that could create things instantaneously. I was missing the point of it, really. You know, I was missing the point that it's about understanding that in this life. And so I'd actually got quite depressed. I sat on this bed literally over there, and I said to the universe, just in my own form of a prayer, you know, give me something in this life that I can do physically that is attributable to these ideas that I have. Give me something I can actually do instead of just knowing this stuff. It's kind of going back to what we were saying about, you know, knowing and experiencing are very different things. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, literally within a week, my best friend, who is also quite a powerful kind of person on my own spiritual journey, and I am for him, like we've both very much complemented each other as we've gone along in this. He shows me this documentary, and when it got to the side near the end where it's talking about how you can use your consciousness to interact and create this contact, I mean, I nearly fell over, because I was just like, oh my God, this is the universe giving me what I was asking for. So for me, there was no doubt. Like for me, there was literally no doubt. So when I went out and started making this type of initiation of contact, the intention was fully there. And so, you know, for people who have come into this through the material aspect, I do understand the frustration, because they haven't had that groundwork, that foundation, that template. But for me, it was there, and it yielded these results. And you know, the most intense was when, I mean, the triangle was insane, and it changed my life forever. But there was a moment where three of these orbs just came down from the sky and hovered above the roof of my house. And I, you know, I was just out in my garden staring at them, and they just hovered above my house and then went over to my neighbor's garden and hovered above there and then flew off into the sky. And I was just like, you know, and people always say, well, why didn't you film this stuff? It's like, because you are not thinking with your brain at that point. I mean, literally my mouth was just like, you know, I would love to have been some sort of ambassador and gone like, oh, welcome. And, you know, like, I was just brain dead. You know, I don't know if you felt the same when your really intense experiences happened. But for me, my brain kind of turned off a little bit, and I wasn't able to, you know, think as clearly as I thought I would be able to.
Yeah, I mean, you just kind of want to enjoy the moment, you know,
and it's just soaking it up.
Yeah, it's like, for me, this isn't about, you know, proving to other people like what I've seen or that they exist. It's like, go on YouTube, you know? Yeah. So for me, it's like, sometimes it's cool to get a photo or video because you can blow it up and like see better than what you're seeing. But yeah, it's about being in the moment and being in that connection. And, you know, I love hearing those kinds of stories, because it's, it's just super cool and it's life-changing.
Totally.
And I do think that we're, you know, as more people keep waking up and the consciousness of the planet and individuals starts raising, you know, we're going to become in greater alignment with these other dimensional entities or whatever you want to call them. And so we'll be able to perceive that more. So I think you're going to have more and more people starting to see things, have these kinds of experiences. And that's why it's so important, I think, to create a safe space for people to come and share and not have. So it's funny, you know, most people are not scared, you know, when they have these experiences.
I wasn't scared. I was just amazed.
I was thrilled.
Yeah.
And most people even too, it's like, it's just awe and wonder. And so I think, and you know, curiosity is a really high frequency. And so I think the more people are just curious about these things and open and make it welcome and are willing to, you know, consider them in a broader context. So I did write one article that some people might be interested in. I think this, the title was something about our deep yearning for ET contact. And for me, it was just kind of an expression. You know, I felt a great sense of love during those experiences. And, but it was also just a sense of reunion and remembering, and that there's like these pages of our human history that are missing, and they're a part of them, just like we're a part of theirs. And so that's why when you mentioned the Catholic thing, I'll be really interested to see how they try to spin that or tell that. But you know, we have a common history in a lot of ways, and are all part of this bigger galactic family. And I think that the more the more we are open to these kinds of experiences, we can start asking these bigger questions and start reevaluating, you know, what does it mean to be human? And like, is there more to me than just this body and this life? Because I think that's part of what this topic does and why it's so interesting to me, is because it's a gateway to just a much more expansive view of everything. And that's ultimately, I think, why we're here, is to expand our perspectives and grow and evolve. And how can we do that if we just keep having the same thoughts and cling to the same narratives and default to the same patterns? It just won't work.
Yeah, absolutely. I really resonate with that, and I completely agree. To get back to your article, something that I really enjoyed reading, because I found it to be quite affirming in relation to my own beliefs. Again, so much of what you wrote, and I was like, yes, you know, this is ticking all the right boxes for me. But it was your differentiation between beings evolving on the physical plane of reality and beings evolving on a non-physical, higher dimensional plane of reality that we're, you know, as physical human beings yet to ascend to. You know, you talk about how physically evolving extraterrestrials may still possess characteristics that we would see as negative, such as aggression, but there are beings of a higher dimension that are not like this due to their level of spiritual evolution. You know, what inspired you to write about this? Why do you think there is this development within the physical, but also a development within the metaphysical, and that these two should maybe not be confused for one another?
Yeah. So basically my understanding is that, you know, you're in the physical up until, I think there's some debate about this, like sixth dimension, you start kind of phasing out of the physical, like you, it's just a different experience. And so it's, if you think about it as a progression, you know, we're just kind of progressing. So we're still in the density of physical form, and there are certain experiences available to us here, but I guess those experiences become less relevant perhaps. And it's just a different kind of experience as you go up in the dimensions. And so, you know, all kinds of civilizations, species are on the same progression. So you have some that, you know, have moved more rapidly and are no longer physical, that are just energy with consciousness. And admittedly, it's really hard to wrap your mind around, but is what it is. But then, you know, there'll be lots of civilizations, like the ones, again, my understanding that we would see in physical craft, you know, sort of by definition, unless they're like material, like coming into materiality from higher dimensions, which I don't know that that happens all that often. You know, I think we can assume that they're also having a third dimensional experience or a fourth dimensional experience or fifth dimensional. And so while the fifth dimension, it's been described to me as that is like a love dimension where, you know, there's all these things that we want are there. But basically part of why I wanted to write about that is to bring some nuance to the discussion. It was a little bit of a response to people who are just like, like all ETs are great. It's like, well, you know, they exist across the spectrum, you know, and we have some neighbors in the lower dimensions. And so you can't just categorize, you know, they're either not all great, but at the same time, you know, they're the people who think that like they're all bad. And it's like, no, it's like they exist across the spectrum. And that's where it really comes down to our own consciousness and discernment and intuition to know what we're dealing with.
Right.
And so, yeah, I was trying to get away with just sort of the overly simplistic view that some people have on ETs.
Well, this is, it's funny because it's something that is, it's echoed in this series of books that I told you about, the Conversations with God books that kind of started me off on this journey. The fourth book, talks about, you know, that there are many physical beings on the plane of existence, on the physical plane of existence, all of which are going through the learning steps of evolving through physical forms. And so some of them, even if they are incredibly technologically advanced, may have traits of aggression or other aspects that we deem as negative. You know, just as we are in some ways an advanced species through our technological paradigm, but not so advanced in our spiritual understandings, right. You know, and we're getting to the point where we can voyage out into space easier, and yet we are not a peaceful race. And so the same can be said for other species evolving on the physical plane of existence. But you know, what this book highlights and what you've kind of highlighted as well is that the assistance that we are receiving from other intelligences might not be coming from the physical plane of existence, that, you know, they can take potentially physical forms, but they are no longer from this physical plane. They are evolving on a higher level of reality to us, you know, as we will one day be doing as well. And it is these, something just popped up on my screen. Let me get rid of that. Yeah, it's these, you know, beings from a higher dimension of reality that are wholly benevolent and willing to assist in our development as a species. And, you know, it is my sincere belief that it's this type of intelligence that we're often interacting with when we engage in initiating contact through consciousness, through coherent protocols. I mean, do you share this idea that it's perhaps when you're going out and looking up at the stars and modeling your thought process around love and connection and unity, that you are maybe not receiving responses from physical extraterrestrials, but it could be very much what people call ultra terrestrials, you know, from another dimension?
To be honest, I don't know. I don't think I've...
Neither do I, but...
Yeah, I mean, I definitely feel connections sometimes with the higher dimensional beings, especially the ones that I work with more closely. And that can happen just like in my bedroom, but I generally feel like when I'm looking, I wonder about that, you know, when I'm seeing ships and things like that and having those experiences, like who's in there?
Yeah, right.
You know, and it's like, you know, and with some of the things like on the UFO tour where the craft were responding to like our lasers and mental requests, it's like there was a telepathic connection there. But yeah, I don't think I've answered for myself what I think that is, but, and some people would say like that's cause for concern, but I've never felt any reason to be afraid.
Well, it's trusting your intuition, right? I mean, yeah. It really is, you know, and the same people have said the exact same thing to me. It's like, hey, like, you know, there's abductions and things happen, and, you know, don't you feel concerned that you aren't 100% sure what it is you're contacting? And it's like, well, for me, if I'm genuinely grounding myself in an intention of receiving some form of contact, some form of communication, some form of interaction through love, you know, through the idea of a peaceful interaction with something that believes in what we've just been talking about in terms of ultimate reality and what we believe ultimate reality to be, I'm not afraid of what that response is going to be. And you know, even with such vivid interactions, like a cloud melting into a triangle, yeah. You know, that's crazy, but it didn't scare me. And no part of me felt scared. And when it happened and when it was over, I was just filled with this amazing feeling of like, oh my gosh, like something actually responded. And it felt beautiful to me. So, you know, I understand why people, you know, get worried about that kind of thing. But for me, you really do have to trust what your body's telling you, what your mind's telling you, what your spirit's telling you at that time. And if it's, you know, if it's saying this is a bad thing, then fair enough. But if there's no indication of that, then why would you bring that into your reality if there's no indication of it, right?
Yeah. And I mean, I actually have many years ago, kind of before my reawakening, as I call it, I did have some like bad energy in my house for a little bit.
Oh, really?
Like, yeah. I don't know that it was necessarily like ET, but I'd be like
kind of poltergeisty or...
So, yeah, kind of like, I don't know what it was, but I was... like I'd be sitting on the couch and like a latch of like a cabinet latch would start like going up and down. And then it would happen like sometimes in my bedroom. And I was like, this is not cool at all. And you know, that was scary. Like I did not like that.
Yeah, that would freak me out. That would freak me out more than a triangle of orbs appearing in the sky.
And honestly, like, I don't think I've maybe shared this story, but it was around that time where I was sleeping and I felt something like closing in on me, but even in my just sleep, like I woke up as it was happening, I just shot like this bright light out and was just like, be gone, you know, and it never happened again. So it's like, and I have heard, you know, I've asked teachers about it and stuff. And, you know, it's like, even if we do happen to have some little pesky something or other come in, it's like, you know, this is a free will universe. Like you just have to say, get out of here.
Yeah, you have to acknowledge your own power.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And you know, it has to honor that. One other quick cool story though, and it's kind of a contrast, same house, but years after that, when I was kind of re-getting into the UFO alien stuff, I was watching, it was the first night I had watched Ancient Aliens. I watched like a couple episodes that night and went to bed thinking it was all really cool. And in the middle of the night, the lights in my bedroom just turned on. And never done that before, never did it again. But like, you know, the sign that I kind of took from it was like, all right, like you... like we're here, you see us now, and like kind of like the light's been turned on,
right,
sort of thing. And
a visual metaphor just kind of happening in front of you. Yeah.
My partner at the time was like, what the hell, you know, like all pissed off, but I was like, yeah,
the beings are talking. Yeah. And he's like, what are you on about? Yeah. Oh, that's great. Carolyn, is there anything else that you wanted to touch on in relation to this article before we wrap this up? Because we've been going for an hour and a half and it's gone flown by.
It has flown by. You know, I think I would just wrap up by just kind of reiterating, you know, based on my experience, consciousness is really everything. You know, it's like it's kind of always the answer to every question. And what I mean by that is like, no matter what we're going through or whatever questions we have, it's always a good idea to try to reach for the highest perspective possible and, you know, ground ourselves in love, in peace, in freedom, in joy, and really connect with, you know, these higher truths that are available in guiding us all. And so for me, that's you know, whether we're talking about ETs or UFOs or getting a new job or even just trying to make sense of everything that's happening on the planet right now. It's like, for me, that consciousness is really just that grander perspective, bringing our divinity to bear, you know, seeking for the truest truth we can hold on to. And I think you find that's just really empowering, also reassuring to know that, you know, we are the creator within our own creation. The universe is responding to us. It loves us. You know, everything that we're dealing with is based on frequency and our own desires and thoughts. And that should give us all great comfort, because it means we can create, we have it within our power to create just some amazing experiences for ourselves. And for me, I'll just say, in case anyone's listening, I really hope that's physical ET contact. benevolent way.
Benevolent way. That was beautifully well put, and I really, really appreciate that. You know, you've done some really great work here with these articles of yours, and for this particular interview, like I said, I really wanted to dive into a discussion around consciousness, and I feel we've done that. But I would love to have you back on in the near future, actually, because you have done work on other areas of this discussion, including a really great piece on skeptics in mainstream science, kind of focusing on Neil deGrasse Tyson, which I would like to get into. But I think we'll have to save that for another time. But I mean it when I say that I would like to get you back on quite soon to have a discussion on the other articles that you've written. I'm wondering if you would like to maybe reconvene sometime next month.
Yeah, that would be great. I had a wonderful time. I really appreciate the invitation. I don't have a ton of people in my life, honestly, that I can talk about this stuff to. So
a lot of people feel your pain with that.
Yeah. So very much enjoy that.
Well, great. And in the meantime, I would encourage everyone listening to check out the rest of Carolyn's articles. Again, you can find links to all of them in the description box below, alongside a link to Carolyn's Twitter, which if you're on Twitter, I would encourage you all to follow as well. It's been an absolute pleasure to have this discussion with you, and I'm sincerely looking forward to a follow-up conversation on some of your work next month.
Likewise. Thanks again for having me.